This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
300 parts per million or less. But since the Industrial Revolution, this level has risen steadily and now is about 392 parts per million. 350 parts per million is a goal that activists such as Bill McKibben of 350.org seek. They consider it a basis for a climate to which human and other life can accommodate. Because many Oregonians will be affected by the coal trains and barges that Amber Energy proposes, there have been protests and public awareness has been raised recently. A couple of days after a rally, March 13, on the Capitol steps in Salem, a permit decision that was to have been made on April 1 was postponed for at least 5 months. The Department of State Lands was involved in this postponement. We begin with the Raging Grannies and other rally talk on March 13th, go to three short interviews at the rally, and then to a discussion of issues and tactics with four activists. I'm Roberta Hall.
We know coal is the dirtiest of the fossil fuels around. It threatens our precious planet. Let's keep coal in the ground. Just say no, dirty coal. Let's just say no, mercury. Just say no, lead poisoning. Let's keep our land pristine.
The proposal for the port in the Columbia River Gorge would propose 48 coal barges down the Columbia River every week, and this is what 48 coal barges might look like. So keep that in mind if we contact our legislators.
Can I ask you why you came?
Okay.
Well, may I have the climate change for the coolest? The length of trains is not really just super big at all. They're hundreds of thousands of miles. It's just a really bad idea.
Thank you. I'm talking with someone who has a health problem related to coal. And can you tell me your name?
Hillary White.
Where do you live?
Corvallis.
Corvallis. And a big group, probably 40 or so, came up on a bus from Corvallis.
I came on the bus. I have trouble breathing as it is from the small particulates of smoke that are in our stagnant air. This will be worse with the coal dust. The particulates are so small, we'll be inhaling them into our lungs, and they will never leave our lungs.
Many years ago, I lived in Wyoming. It's experienced another big rush on its natural resources, coal and, of course, the natural gas, which when I lived there back in the early 60s, it was just burned off on the way to getting oil, and now those are all valuable, and we've got to do something to keep them under control. But coal is one of the worst for people with breathing problems.
Yes, it is, and also it's a highly populated area, Pacific Northwest.
And that's where the trains are running through.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jobs is a very powerful issue. We all have jobs. We all need to have jobs. I say, apart from being there to marry my wife and being there for the birth of my daughter, signing a paycheck is one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had in my life. There's an interesting story about how the coal industry is co-opting or trying to co-opt the jobs argument. The other morning, I have a stand-up morning with my crew on Monday mornings, and one of my crew members came in with a Morro Pacific hat on. I'm like, What's up with the Morro Pacific hat? He's like, well, they paid me to go to this meeting. I'm like, yeah, that's unsurprising, the tactics. So it's very important and very powerful. I don't think anybody here is getting paid to come to this rally.
So, Naomi, tell me why you came to the rally.
To help keep coal out of Oregon.
Okay, and you're from Albany, North
Albany.
Albany,
and the train will go within 100 feet of where I work out three times a week, and I don't want coal dust in my workout room.
And you have been a volunteer with the Red Cross Disaster Program for many years, and I happen to know that you got a master's degree in anthropology focused on health and disasters and exchange with our sister city in Ukraine. So you have also studied a lot of health courses, if I remember right.
I have, and one of my concerns with the coal trains is that the ability of the infrastructure to support that kind of weight, and we're going to see more coal train accidents, and that can be devastating in our communities. That's something that the Red Cross would potentially be involved in.
Tell us a little bit about the kinds of disasters you've helped clean up. Has there ever been one involving trains that you have been involved
not
with?
Not that I have worked on. I've done hurricanes and wildland fires.
Ah, yeah. You have a lot of experience with what can happen. And they are almost always unexpected.
They are. The things that we think cannot go wrong can go wrong. We learned that in Japan with the earthquake and tsunami there, and we're constantly learning that in natural disasters in this country as well. We plan for a certain level thinking that it won't go beyond that level, but it can.
There it can. Naomi Widener, thank you very much for talking.
A hot topic politically in the state, region, and the country is energy. And we all need it, we all use it, and we overuse it, and we know that. But we have people who are opposing coal exports at this time, exports from the U.S. to China in this case, but it's all involved with misuse and problems with energy. So I have four people here to talk about the issue, and we have Heather Hill and Leonard Higgins, Gene Towns, and Chris Paul. They're all members of 350 Corvallis, which is a part of 350.org. So first off here, Chris Paul will be telling us a little bit about some of the organizations that are working on these issues.
So I had started 350 Corvallis back in December. And here in Corvallis, we have a great community, and there's a lot of support behind making changes in our community. But I saw that a lot of that support had to do with energy efficiency. I wanted to go beyond changing my light bulbs and riding my bike more often, and I saw a need for more political action. So I was familiar with Bill McKibben and the 350.org organization, and I really liked the work that they were doing, and I saw that there wasn't a local chapter here in Corvallis, so we started a local chapter back in December, and we've been meeting every other week since then. We recently chose three different focus areas or three working groups. One of them is on coal and LNG, which is liquefied natural gas. Both of these things are being exported from the U.S. to Asian markets. The second area is the fossil fuels divestment campaign. This is asking people, such as OSU with their endowment, to not invest in fossil fuel companies that are wrecking our environment. And the third area of focus, we're looking at trying to implement a possible carbon tax. And we have a group within our group that is interested in working with the Citizens Climate Lobby on that. And in addition, as a larger group, we will do education and outreach, you know, certainly looking at opposing Keystone XL as well. But those are kind of our three focus areas we've decided on.
So you have a really multi-pronged thrust here and can involve people in one or all three of them, or all four. It'll probably be five or six before long before we get done here, I bet. Leonard, the state is very involved right now, and of course we had the big rally March 13th at the legislature. There are no specific bills that we are aware of that attack this issue, but at the same time, the governor, of course, is at the Capitol, and the governor is a key person. So, Leonard, tell us how the state is involved and why the state has a big role here right now.
So, as I understand it, where we're at right now is that a permit request has been submitted to Oregon, specifically to Department of State Lands, which is managed, of course, by the governor, so it's definitely a decision that Kitzhopper will be a part of to allow them to put in port facilities at the Port of Morrow and a couple of other ports. But I think right now the application under consideration is Port of Morrow to receive the coal shipments from the Midwest and ship them out to Asia and China. I was very pleased to see that Governor Kitzhaber some months ago sent a letter to BLM and the Army Corps of Engineers requesting that a regional environmental impact statement be done, not just to consider specifically only local impacts like at the Port of Morrow, but to look at across Oregon and across the Northwest, what will be the impacts of running all this coal through the state. As I understand it, the response he got from Army Corps of Engineers was that they preferred to just look at the local impacts. And as far as I know, BLM didn't respond. I'm very happy to hear after our rally on the 13th that there's going to be more time. It did sound like the Department of State Lands was going to be making a decision on April 1st, but now that's been pushed out, I think, for 5 months. So I'm very hopeful that during that time, we as a state and as a region will look at and understand that there's very little benefit and a lot of harm to running all that coal through here, both in terms of the impacts as the coal goes through and the effects on climate change to burn all of that dirty coal.
The Army Corps of Engineers was specifically asked to look at endangered salmon species and also at tribal fishing rights, which need to be observed. So they have some special obligations now. Remember DEQ back in December? The DEQ people that were at the comment session said they didn't have a very wide range of things they were allowed to look at. But as we have talked and as Lloyd Marbette made clear at that meeting, actually in their charter, their obligations are very broad or could be broadly interpreted to reach to such things as CO2 in the environment and its ultimate impact on human health and on the environment quality too. So we don't all share the same interpretations of what these laws are, but it's interesting that you mention that the Army Corps of Engineers has chosen to take a narrower view and the Bureau of Land Management as well. Well, Heather, you have done some research on the impacts that might accrue should these trains start rolling.
Yes. As you know, burning coal is a main contributor of climate change, as it's responsible for one-third of the U.S. carbon emissions. Some of the impacts of having the uncovered trains running through Oregon, one of them is the escape coal dust, because here in Oregon, you know, it rains a lot. It's going to affect our air, land, and water. For example, when it rains, the coal dust will drain out of the holes at the bottom of the train, and it's going to flush out heavy metals like arsenic and lead. These are toxic to wildlife as well as us. Also, the coal trains are going to go through our most fertile land that we use to grow our food that we eat, because it's going to be coming along the Columbia River and the gorge, and the coal dust cannot be just washed off. So, for example, in West Shore coal export terminals in Vancouver, British Columbia, they have about 1.5 million tons of coal that's stored 8.5 stories high. Residents talk about the black dust collecting on their Venetian blinds, and painting companies are advertising special cleaning treatments to remove the coal dust. So this coal dust, with the arsenic and heavy metals and lead in it, it's going to be landing on our food that we eat. It's going to be in our air, and we know what happened to the coal miners, the chronic bronchitis, reducing their lung functioning. Also, think about what's going to happen to fish and our mussels and oysters, the filter feeders. So everything that they ingest, they absorb it. And so we're going to eat that, and then it goes up our food chain, and then the fish eat that. So it's really going to impact all of our health, our lung function, our air, land, and water. I'm hoping that we can build public support and stop this from happening to protect ourselves and our land.
So public support, how do we do that, Jean?
People need to learn about some of the facts of what this means and get involved in some of the groups that are working on this issue. and contact their legislators. And some of the facts that have not come up yet in any of the other people who have been speaking are this is a massive amount of coal to be moved through here. They're talking about 125 million tons of coal a year moving through here, which means something like 40 to 50 mile and a half long open car coal trains leaving here and going through our communities per day. That's a huge amount of coal traffic. It will impact the Willamette Valley or down the Columbia Gorge. It goes up into Washington. Another thing to think about, though we have no regulatory ability to address this coal is bound for China. It will be burned in power plants there and have a massive contribution to climate change. And a lot of the pollutants, including mercury, is going to blow right back on Oregon and Washington. And though, as I say, we have no regulatory ability to address, it's something we need to seriously be looking at and try to address it through some of the regulatory avenues that we already have, which is environmental impact statements about the direct impact of the trains and the coal dust they'll be shedding as they move through our communities.
And if people are interested in getting more involved, I wanted to mention the rally on March 13th that happened in Salem was actually organized by Columbia Riverkeeper and also the Power Past Coal Coalition. And that includes the Sierra Club and their Beyond Coal group and also Greenpeace. So these are all groups that you can find local chapters of. If you are here in Corvallis, you can work with our group. You can find us on the web at 350corvallis.org. In Albany, there's a group that we've worked with called Albany Against Coal Trains. Albany is one of the cities that the coal trains would potentially be traveling through. They're working on trying to get their city council to pass a resolution like many other communities have. We also have a local Sierra Club chapter here, the Mary's Peak chapter, and they have an environmental action team that meets regularly. So there are a lot of different organizations that you can get involved with to work on this.
Additionally, around the state, there are very active groups working on the coal train issues in Eugene and Salem and Portland. And I suspect there's some also up the Columbia River Gorge and Hood River, but I don't know specifically about those.
I remember at the DEQ rally talking to people who represented those cities along with Columbia. It's interesting that this issue, because the trains cover so many areas and run through so many areas and have multiple impacts, just looking around, it seems that people who are not normally involved in political issues have come out for this. Have you all noticed that? You have friends who have responded in that way that don't normally?
I think there's a lot of NIMBY kind of activism that's coming out of this, the not in my backyard effect. I think people that don't normally get involved or maybe don't see how climate change would affect them, they see that these trains are going to come through their backyards and the coal dust. It seems like there's a lot of kind of focus on that, but I think that's because that's where most of the power in our state government lies in protecting what's happening here in Oregon. But, you know, the climate change issue, I think, is something that we really need to talk about as well. And basically, by exporting this coal, we're externalizing our contribution to climate change. Our country brags about how we're kind of leveling out our contribution, but I don't think we can brag about that if at the same time we're just exporting that problem.
And then there's the fracking problem that relates to natural gas. And right now, it's said, you know, very freely around that natural gas is cheaper than it's been. I'm not following the prices, so I don't really know that. And yet you read about it. I read the magazine High Country News, chilling stories about what has happened with fracking in terms of water, your own water supply, and the NIMBY issue, I think, has come to the surface there. And I'm told that in terms of rights coalitions that assert the rights of local people to control their own environment, that most of those cases that have succeeded so far have been with fracking. And because of the immediate personal impacts on local communities, what drew you, Leonard? Was it the larger CO2 issue or the coal?
So what brought me to join 350 Corvallis was concern about climate change. It's very clear that we're going to be lucky globally to keep the average global temperature rise to the 2-degree targets that they set some time ago. And when I read about what the impacts are of 3 or 4 or more degrees increase centigrade in global temperatures, I'm scared for my grandkids and future generations. I have to do something.
Heather, how about you? I feel the same way as Leonard does. I've been following 350.org for a long time, but I've been a master's student, so no time for anything. But now I'm pretty much done. I've been looking to see if there was a 350 Corvallis group all the time, and I'm like, what's going on? You know, and I finally found it. And so the coal issue is a huge issue, and I was like, I will do whatever it takes to stop this from happening. We cannot allow this to happen. We already know what's happening with the Keystone Tar Sands XL issue. I want to empower people and get them involved. We have to stand in solidarity together, because this is the only way that we're going to be able to fight these actions against us. Big oil, big coal, for far too long have been exploiting all of us, our land, air, water. I've just changed my idea of what I want to do with my degree. Is I want to help build a movement and lean people and bring people together, because this is the only way I feel that we're going to make these changes.
I'm just curious, what is your degree?
A master's in environmental science, and I've been focusing on water resources and conflict management. But I've seen this huge need and this huge divide between the public and science, and as I've been studying, and I really want to put this together, because this is part of the reason why a lot of these things are happening, because there's this divide and people don't really understand the true impacts.
The jobs issue is always thrust upon us and put upon us, and that concept was traced back for several hundred years. The same thing has come up. We've been doing the same stupid call and response politically. How come we haven't seen through it? Any ideas?
Because the coal and the oil industry, they have millions that they spend lobbying. So it's hard to get that marketing and that word out.
This isn't really the subject, but I want to insert here the fact that basically all of this comes down to, and so many of our problems, to the power of the corporations. And people should pay attention when it passes in front of them to the Move to Amend group that is trying to get a constitutional amendment to limit the power of corporations by writing something that declares they are not people, which the Supreme Court has said, and they do not have the same constitutional rights as people, and you can limit the amount of money that they put into elections. That's a big piece of our problem here. Leonard and I were at the Keystone Pipeline rally in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago. A sign I saw there just resonates with me. It said, "There is no planet B. We've got to take care of what we've got."
I love that.
Very nice.
I'd like to draw a couple of parallels. One, to follow up on what Heather said about our money. It seems clear to me that there's been the same ad campaign, a similar ad campaign, disinformation about climate change as there was about tobacco. There's been a lot of investment in trying to get people to believe that there's not agreement in the scientific community about global warming, and that's just not true. The majority of scientists agree that we have a problem and we need to do something about it. Many of the folks that are most alarmed are the scientists that really understand the data. The other parallel I wanted to draw, going back to something that Chris said, is one of the campaigns is carbon taxes. I wanted to point out that in the past, we had a big problem globally with acid rain, and they did a cap and trade kind of approach, which is similar to how a carbon tax would work. And over time, as they introduced the true cost of that, I think sulfur dioxide was the agent that was getting into the atmosphere that was causing the acid rain, putting the true costs of expelling the sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere on the folks that were doing that pollution, you know, incentivized them to reduce it, and we solved that problem. And I think that the carbon tax has a lot of promise as a similar solution for the carbon in the atmosphere.
Because that would tax the carbon at its source.
Yes.
At the beginning and not at the end, as happens with many of our products today. We can predict some of these things and adjust the taxes accordingly.
I think one of the reasons that people, I think a lot of people know about climate change. Polls out there show that more and more people are starting to believe that it's real, it's caused by us, it's happening. But it's not a top priority in a lot of people's minds. We talk a lot about melting ice caps and polar bears and what's going to happen to someone on the other side of the globe. And I don't think that motivates people to put climate change at the top of their list. I was just reading an article about how this ongoing drought that's been happening in the Midwest is catching up with us, and we're going to see rising food prices this year. Gas prices keep going up, and that's just going to get worse. What is it going to look like in even just 10 years from now if these droughts continue? And they will, is what the scientists are telling us. So I think we need to maybe focus on that. There's going to be increasing civil unrest, water shortages. Farmers are already fighting over water with oil producers that need millions of gallons of water to do their fracking. We need to make it hit home a little bit more for people. It's not just about polar bears.
They're running these uncovered trains through Oregon. We are going to have to bear the cleanup costs.
Jean, could you wrap up for us what citizens can do? Who should we call? Who should we write?
First thing to do is get involved in one of the groups that is already working on many of these issues that are all over the state and all over the country. They have ideas about actions that you can take. It's a little hard as an individual out there without getting together with a larger group of people to feel like you have any impact. And these groups can educate you, help give you a voice, give you some compatriots to take action with. Pay attention to the information that's out there and get involved. We all have got to be involved. I saw a figure a week ago that only at this point 18% of Americans are seriously concerned about climate change. That figure needs to go way up.
Leonard, who in the state should be contacted?
So I'd encourage all of the folks that care about this state to write or call Governor Kitzhaber and ask him to deny approval for the permits for the shipment of coal through Oregon to be shipped to Asian destinations.
Okay. Chris?
At our website, 350corvallis.org, I have added a monthly actions page. So if you go to our website and look under the actions link, you'll see this month's actions. There'll be a variety of things on there that you can choose from. Anything that takes from a few minutes, just signing an online petition, on up to things that are a little bit more involved. So if everybody just had, you know, even 5 minutes a month, there's some ideas on there, and certainly getting involved with local groups.
And that's 350corvallis.org.
Well, thank you all. And that's Jean Towns, Heather Hill, Leonard Higgins, and Chris Paul. And I'm Roberta Hall.
That was Roberta Hall speaking with four Oregon activists opposing the coal export plan of Amber Energy. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9:30. Somewhere out there, there's a cup of coffee with your name on it. It's calling to you.
Starting Thursday and continuing every day of our spring membership drive, it's KBOO's Vintage Poster Contest. Each morning at 7 a.m., we will post a new image of a historic KBOO event poster on our website, kboo.fm. You'll have until 3 p.m. that same day to enter the contest for a chance to win the only other known copy of the poster. See the art and enter the contest at kboo.fm. Only one entry per person per day. Spread the word about KBOO's poster contest. Anyone can enter. Scanning and reproduction services for KBOO's poster contest provided by Technical Imaging Services located in Portland's Old Town.
And now, Seniors for Peace. Happy 10th anniversary.
TUC Radio, time of useful consciousness. Happy 10th anniversary, Seniors for Peace. Remember the huge demonstrations against the war in Iraq in 2003? Or of those hundreds of thousands who came out for peace across the world? Mostly films, photos, and very fond memories survive. But one group, maybe the most unlikely of all, The Seniors for Peace in Mill Valley, California, just kept going. For 10 years now, this year, 2013, every Friday at 4 p.m., rain or shine, they spend an hour at the intersection of Miller and Camino Alto with hand drums, guitar, harmonica and fiddle, and banners for peace. That in spite of the need of some to use a wheelchair or walker, since their average age is now 86 and many are in their 90s. Now they have 144 dues-paying members. They expanded their peace work into campaigns for Afghanistan, Haiti, and tsunami relief, and they address local wage and housing issues as well as global warming. Most recently, they voted to donate $100 off their dues to the Marin County District Attorney's Gun Buyback Program. You are about to hear my recording of their second ever rally in 2003. Many of those original members have found their personal peace during the last 10 years, and only their eloquent voices survive. But as Frieda Engel, now 93, told me, we have a wonderful crop of youngsters in their 80s who are taking our places. And Wally Mulvey, in 2013, is still leading the singing with his guitar. He says, I'm not that good, but I'm loud. So now I'm taking you back to 2003, into the sun-filled lobby of the Redwoods Retirement Community. That's where I first met Wally Mulvey.
You mean you want me to sing this thing for you?
That would be great.
Oh, I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside and study ever no more. Okay, everyone.
As Wally sang, the growing group of seniors drew closer. Among them, the two women who had organized the demonstrations, Phyllis Hamilton and Nora Boscoff. I got to speak to Phyllis first.
We actually thought maybe 30 people, so we did 30 signs. Well, when all